welcome to episode 127 of the Geocaching Podcast, Muggle Conversion, recorded live on October 7th, 2009. I'm your host, XPunkX, with
Daryl W4.
If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444, and you can also join our live chat room to participate with our other listeners, and that can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. Click the Join Now button to participate on the right. Our voicemail line is 206-3503-GPS, and we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. Daryl, welcome back. It's been a long time since we've done a live show here on the internet. Well, we did one last week, but I mean on a Tuesday night. How have you been?
Not bad, but it only seems like a couple of days since we did the last show, because, well, it was just a couple of days ago.
That is true. We did our live meetup in South Bend, and that was a blast, man.
I can't wait to do another one. That was so much fun.
It was, but it was only a few days since the last time. So, it's definitely quick turnaround time on recording.
Oh, definitely. I was very happy to see that you got that out on, Sunday morning, I think. Yeah. Just so much fun, though. The only thing I really wish we would have done differently was have an open mic for the audience, because you didn't really get the feeling of being in a live audience performance kind of thing.
No, you definitely didn't, because you didn't hear anyone laughing and things like that, but it was definitely a blast.
Yeah, so, we have new tips for next time, and we'll do it a little differently and hopefully come up with a much better product.
And hopefully we'll get to move around a little bit, so we'll be able to get some other people that couldn't make it to South Bend, maybe try it up near your area.
Well, we already have the venue in mind. All we have to do is figure out a date.
Yes, definitely. I really enjoyed the live event. Anyone who listened to us live, I think it was only like two or three people that listened to us live on the internet, and that was okay, because I figured that would happen since it was a Saturday. But it was definitely good to listen, to come see people who actually listen, some of our listeners and just some other people, some new people that have never heard of us before. And it was definitely a fun event.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it took a lot of work to get the thing set up and everything, but I think it was well worth it. I did put together a couple of videos, though, that we dropped in the Plus feed and then to my blog. Did you have a chance to look at either one of those yet?
I did. I caught the ones that came down in the Plus feed that you posted, and that was definitely those are definitely really cool to see behind the scenes of our recording.
Well, and the thing that's really, let's face it, the video kind of sucks, but the thing that was cool about it, that was done entirely on the 3G, the iPhone 3G, or 3GS actually, video shot on the 3GS, the editing is done there. The only thing I did was transfer it to the computer to upload to either Google or to transcode so that it could be put into the Plus feed. So it's really just amazing that you've got that much power in that tiny little device.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed with the quality of it. I mean, obviously it was on a phone, but it definitely was a good quality video.
Yeah, and I'm coming from, having done pro video for so long with, the big, industrial and, low-end broadcast cameras. So I'm kind of biased, but to think that all that's just in the palm of your hand now.
Yeah,
especially the editing is so cool here.
Yeah, that is cool, especially when you're not, obviously doing something for DVD, but you're doing something, just for the fun of it, and it works out fairly well.
Well, and like YouTube is real low quality anyway, so it's kind of like the great equalizer.
Yeah, definitely. Now,
throw up some VHS quality stuff, and people probably aren't going to be able to tell the difference.
No, not really. Now, have you guys done much since the event? I mean, I know it was only a few days ago, but...
No, we did a couple of caches on the way down. We hit the one cache afterward. And, we tried for that webcam cache, and unfortunately, that didn't work again.
No, the webcam was down, hadn't updated for like 80 minutes. So we didn't get a chance to do that one. But it was fun to meet up a little bit before the event and stand in the rain, I guess, while we were trying to wait and get the camera up.
Oh, yeah, and it was cold and just icky out.
Yeah,
it was nice after the event, though, especially when we had what was it, about a dozen of us hunting around for a cache that someone had already snagged and taken to their vehicle.
Yeah, that was fun watching them try to watch us try to find the cache that we couldn't find.
Yeah, especially because we were on the wrong side of the road.
Yeah, but the funny thing, Daryl, is I've been to that cache location several times trying to find it, and every time that I've been there, my GPS has been off by, you know, like 100 feet or something. So it was interesting to see it was not just a single time of my GPS being off. It was every time I was there.
Well, and even the Google Maps, or actually it was a Bing Maps because it was through the geocaching iPhone app. Even that had it on the wrong side of the street.
Yeah.
So there's something definitely up with those cords.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, we found it, and that was a fun time. We had a whole bunch of people trying to find that at the same time.
Yeah, and that's what makes those kind of caches fun, too.
Yeah, it was. Hey, now speaking of some fun caches, we are going to be doing our summer caching stories. This is the last day to get your summer caching stories in. We've only got a few people that have put their caching stories in, so you have a really good chance of actually winning that, and we'll actually do the drawing next week live on the show. So if you have a summer caching story, we're going to be doing that after the geocaching question of the day, so go ahead and call in now, 724-444-7444. And the TalkCast ID is 7525. Go ahead and press the request to talk if you're in the chat room. If you're just on the phone, go ahead and press *8, and that'll get you in our queue to talk. But first, let's listen to the geocaching question of the day.
Geocaching question of the day. Bad cop asks, you answer.
Hello. This is the Bad Cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience, and then summarize the replies and post it on my website. I hope this little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. Recently, I posted a question from the Twitter user Unnamed Mike. He wanted to know, have you ever used public transportation to geocache? This question was divided right down the middle. There were several pros and cons on each side. However, as the geocacher The Wooden Radio put it, buses don't stop at ammo cans in the woods. So tell me, have you used public transportation to geocache? Want to find out more? Follow me, The Bad Cop, on Twitter.
Well, thank you, The Bad Cop. That is definitely an interesting question, and one that, you know, it's definitely interesting to see the results there. Now, moving on to the summer caching stories, we have Jeff Bolden right now live with us. So, Jeff, go ahead and tell us your caching story.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. Mine, I actually went back to last summer because we had a really interesting experience. The first official day of summer, it was Labor Day. So I have a friend who has three girls, and I have three girls, and they're all the same age, and they're real close together. Well, the middle two and the older two, and Norm and I and another friend, decided to go out for the day and catch a bunch that are on these horse trails along a river close to my house. So we were out hiking in the woods, having a good old time, and we're at one cache, and we kind of hear a little rumbling in the background. And Tennessee in late spring is very unpredictable at times. So we look at each other and kind of listen to it, and it just doesn't seem to be getting any closer. So we head on. We get up to the next one. It's a cache called Barbershop at the Summit. It's really cool because we looked around, found this, I think it's an old rocket-propelled grenade tube. It's about 3 feet long, metal army tube that the cacher had painted it red and white like a barbershop pole. Really cool. We are looking through there. I'm arguing with my 13-year-old as to why she's not allowed to trade for the machete that's in there. When we start feeling raindrops, so we hurriedly put everything back in and notice there's a poncho in the cache, so we grab it and get it all put back together. We're kind of standing there huddled in some trees, trying to kind of you know, get out of the wetness as much as we can. We figure we're just going to stand there while this little, you know, cloudburst blows by. As we're standing there, it keeps getting harder and harder, and all of a sudden it starts crashing thunder and lightning all around us. We're standing on top, as it said, it's the summit. It's the highest point in this area. We're standing on top of it. So I look at Norm and Aaron and say, you know, maybe we should go down, you know, and huddle up below the edge of the rock line. So we kind of scramble down to a lower spot and huddle up against the side of the thing. And Aaron was smart and looked at the weather forecast and saw the chance of rain. So he had his own poncho on by this time. And Norm and I take the other poncho and kind of rip it open and fashion this tent against the side of the rocks and kind of hold it over us. And we have two of the girls under there with us, and the two little ones kind of get up under Aaron's poncho, and we just huddle up against this rock cliff as it is thunder and lightning all around us. This goes on for 2 hours that we are huddled against this rock cliff, and it just does not let up. And the thunder and the lightning does not stop for 2 hours. Finally, the thunder and lightning moves off, and it's still raining really good. But at this point, we think, well, we're not in danger of being struck anymore, so we take off. We're heading out through the woods trying to get back to the main road. We come to this little service road, which, as I put in my log at this point, is a service river. So I take the kids and start hiking down this little service road to the road, and Norman and Aaron head straight to the car to go get it, try to meet us, because they've got like 0.3 miles to hike through the woods in this rain to get to the car. Finally, we get out to the road and wait for a while, and then the car comes down, and we all pile into the van and head off, soaked to the bone. But fortunately, we made it out alive and, well, had a really great experience that we're still talking about a year and a half later.
Well, thanks for sharing your story with us. That sounds like a definitely a great summer caching story.
Well, thanks a lot.
Next, we have Paul, and Paul would like to share a summer caching story with us, too. Paul, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you. Hopefully everybody had fun at their meetup today over the weekend.
Yeah, it was definitely a fun meetup.
Yeah, that's good. I have a nice story for y'all. Nice summer adventure if y'all want to hear it.
Sure. Go ahead and tell us.
Okay, well, this was from last year. Me and several other friends from the group Bacon, other area cachers of note, decided to meet up at the park and ride off of 79 and go do some caching up in Crawford County, Pennsylvania, near Meadville. And I got a telephone call as I was sitting there waiting on them to go meet them at a new cache. So we went to that one, which is called Sunken Garden Trail in Moraine State Park, and we made the FTF on that. And then from there, we went back to the park and ride, dropped some cars off, piled all into Purple KV's Ford Explorer, and off we went up for a cache run. And we were going to go to an event up near Cleveland and on the way catch some caches. It was a nice sunny day, and as we travel up, we were all talking about it. And, well, we got to our first cache, which was GCPVFP, the 4x4 Hillbilly Hide. And it's down a dirt road, which is labeled as a road on all the maps that I've seen. And being a dirt road, it had some very large water-filled potholes covering the whole entire road, if you want to call them that. And we managed to get down near a cache, and there's one last pothole, water-filled pothole to go through. And unfortunately, the car did make it through, but it stalled on the other side of it. So we went, did some checking on the car, got it started, and then we went and tried to find the cache. Unfortunately, the cache had been muggled and was no longer there. So we returned back to the Ford Explorer, and Kathy turned the vehicle around. Now, that's purple KV. And with some encouragement from the backside there, from our Help 100 and me, and some encouragement from the right seat, Silver Horse, she floored it and tried to go through the large puddle. And, of course, we're all screaming, go, 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 don't stop. And she's like, I can't, it's dead. So, needless to say, we're all looking at our options now with the Ford Explorer in a rather large puddle in the middle of the road. And the water was three-quarters of the way up the tires, at least, on my side. On the other side, they're full the way up on the tires. So we all get out, and of course, I had some really nice waterproof boots. But unfortunately, they are not so waterproof when the water is above the boot. And these are some tall boots, too. We get out. We try to pull the vehicle out. We tried a few things. We even called AAA. And after a little while, we see the tow truck coming down, backing down the lane. And we go up and meet up with the guy, and he's yelling at us, and of course, we're yelling at him because we're a little bit of distance away and he wasn't coming any closer. And he offers us a ride to someplace where we can be holed up and have phone and all that. And we all had our cell phones with us, so we said, no, thank you. We'll just wait here. And then he yelled that AAA will not help us. And he left in a mean mood. So we all went back to the Ford Explorer, and we were looking, trying to figure out what to do, tried to get it out. We couldn't get it out. So we all were talking, and we tried to decide it on how we can get this out. And then I forget who it was that came up with the contact, the Guyute Trail 10 team. They have a nice Jeep Liberty that is jacked and stacked and love the four-wheel drive stuff. So we contacted them, and they said, well, we're kind of tight on money, so if you buy us lunch and buy us gas, we'll come. And we said, we'll do it. So he came up, and while we're waiting on him to get up there, which was about 90 minutes, we set up Camp Bacon. We set up a nice fire, and we're just sitting around there on some camp chairs that we brought and just chilling when it was noticed that there was a bunch of blueberry bushes around us with bunches and bunches of blueberries. So some of them start digging in big time, and they made a major hit on the blueberries. And then the Guyute Trail 10 team shows up, and they are pretty amazed at our camp there and pretty amazed at Purple KV's Ford Explorer sitting in this puddle. So we go in, hook up those straps after they turn around, and they pulled us out. And then we did some looking at it, and then we pulled it down to the edge of the main road and kind of sat there, and we started digging into it, trying to figure out what happened. We kind of figured that water got into the intake or into the cylinders, and I was really hoping it wasn't the cylinders. But we couldn't get all the spark plugs off after some run for parts and some of the locals. So everybody decided to go do a cache that was nearby called Chaotic Altitude by Rev Mike. That is GC1 Bravo GG3. It has since been archived. And people did that, and they climbed a nice over 100-foot tower to get the coordinates to the second stage and final. When we got back to from doing the cache, we called AAA again and told them that we were out on the road, off of the dirt road, so it was easy for the tow truck to pick us up, and that we needed a ride back down to Butler, Pennsylvania. And after a while of waiting, they called back. We called the AAA back, and they said, hey, he's on the way. And after another call, said he was on the way, and they verified that he was on the way, state police showed up. And he does some checking, and his dispatch tells him that the tow truck guy had refused to tow. So now why, to me, why was the state police dispatcher saying he refused and AAA saying he was on the way? But anyhow, we decided to call AAA back after that, and they got the tow truck guy from Butler City to come up and pick us up. So about midnight, he finally shows up and picks the truck up. And off we go down to pick the cars up and meet on down there. And we had breakfast at about 2 or 3 in the morning. So this started out early in the morning. So we figure about 15 hours later, the tow truck finally shows up. So we were sitting there for about 15 hours. Now that, I guess you can say, is an adventure.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And, of course, Lynn from the Ute 1210 team does a lot of pictures, and they came up with a nice little video, which I just posted a link to the YouTube that they have on there for anybody who wants to see. And, of course, our Help 100 did a real nice log on the cache. That's GCPVFP for anybody that wants to go read that. It's like 3 pages long, so it's really a nice one there. So needless to say, we got, I think I got 3 caches that day, and everybody else got two caches because we stopped at a rest stop that I hadn't had. So that was far short of our plans for that day.
Well, it does definitely sound like you had a quite a summer caching adventure.
Yes, we did, and we still talk about that and bring that up at times.
Well, thank you for putting in your entry to the summer caching story. Now, Daryl, summer caching is obviously going to present itself, well, any caching, where you have the opportunity to meet muggles, people who don't know what caching is, those people who give you strange looks because you're looking under a park bench or looking, you know, random places. And so we've thought tonight that we would talk a little bit about muggle conversion. This is a request from an attendee at our event. This was previously discussed on the Cachers of the Roundtable. That was episode 22. We're going to go ahead and bring it up and talk a little bit more about that. We'll link to the episode in our show notes. But Daryl, what's the best way when someone comes and asks you, what are you doing? Like, how's the best way to convert them?
Well, you know, I haven't really found anything yet. We talked about it a bunch on CRT 22, of course. But one of the things I've kind of decided is that high-tech scavenger hunt tends to work better than treasure hunt. Because when you say treasure hunt, people kind of start thinking it's something about, monetary value. And, we talked about the customs officials last week, and they especially don't like the treasure hunt response.
No, I usually find that I say it's a high-tech scavenger hunt, and then I kind of go into saying it's a treasure hunt. Like I say, it's a high-tech scavenger hunt with GPS, kind of like a treasure hunt. You're hunting out plastic containers in the woods.
Yeah, see, and I've learned now to not use that treasure hunt term because it's gotten us into a little bit longer delay at the border than it should have.
Yeah,
it's
one of those things that
it's
forget.
Really kind of dependent. Yeah, as we step on each other.
Yeah,
but it is one of those things where you just have to kind of feel out who it is you're talking with and what their interest is and, you know, how much you have to tell them. But if it is someone who's interested, you know, yeah, definitely go into a, you know, deeper in-depth conversation about, what is geocaching? How does it work? How do you find the caches? But it's really kind of hard, no matter what we do, to give a feeling of what the activity is just by talking. You really got to get them out on the trail.
Well, that is true. I mean, because there's so much involved with caching, what do you say? Do you talk about travelers? Do you talk about different sizes of caches? It really is best to get them out on the trail. I would say I recommend to a lot of local parks and local places like that, local clubs have geocaching 101 events of, you know, what is caching? And I would say if you meet someone, take them to that. Say, hey, look, you know, our local geocaching club is having a 101 event. Let's go.
Yeah, and you can always take someone out yourself, especially if it's someone you know. And it's a good way to get out and have some fun. But one of the things I found is that a number of the people we want to take out just really aren't into getting out in the woods. They're more into the urban hides. And that's where it really gets tough, you know, without something like a geocaching 101 first, because they don't understand that, you know, you're supposed to be stealthy. They just want to go for the cache.
Well, yeah, and it's sometimes a lot of harder too, because the ones in the woods are usually a lot easier than the ones that are in, you know, in the urban areas.
Yeah, and they have nothing to base it on. And whenever I've gone out with newer cachers, they always have issues trying to find that first one or two caches, unless it's something that's right out there, you know.
Yeah.
If it's an ammo can just sitting it, you know, in the tree, it's pretty obvious. But when you get into something that's under a pile of sticks, they don't know to check that pile of sticks.
Yeah, that is true. Now, some parks also and outdoor retailers have beginner events too. I know our local parks have a 101 event. That's a good place to take them to, especially if there's already caches in the park.
Well, and another good point about that is that a lot of the parks will actually have GPSRs that they can rent that are preloaded with the caches. Most of the time, we find that it's something as simple as, you know, leave your credit card and your driver's license and you can take it out for the day. So it's a good way for them to get started without doing anything. But you also have to think about what maybe are these guys going to want to do if they actually want to try it without any of that stuff. And very recently, Groundspeak has released that geocaching intro app for the iPhone. And that's a great way to get someone who has, you know, you have to have an iPhone 3G or 3GS. But if you know someone who's got an iPhone, that's a great thing to do because it's simply download the app and it shows you the three closest caches. Which one do you want to go to? And they can kind of get a feel for it real quick that way.
Well, yeah. And for, I would say, as far as if you're in if you're out caching and someone you don't know, especially those type of people are not going to want to be like, hey, sure, I'll go with you caching. Like, usually they got something else to do. Usually they just want to know quickly what you're doing. There are several different websites out there that have kind of a, this is what geocaching is, this is what I'm doing type of a thing, like a pamphlet that you can print out or laminate and hand to them. I think that's the best way as far as to someone who's not a friend with you, that's not going to want to go out with you in the woods. I mean, you may not actually convert them to a muggle, but you're going to probably get less people calling the police on you if you hand them something saying, hey, this is what I'm doing. You know, I'm high-tech scavenger hunting. We're looking for this. And here's kind of a little information on it.
Yeah, those trifold brochures have been mentioned many, many times by people who have run into official muggles and helped them evade, you know, sometime in the back of the police car.
Yeah, that's definitely, and those are freely available on many, many caching websites.
Yeah, and you print them up, you just take a couple of them with you and you can pass them out. The cards, though, are probably my favorite. Then I keep meaning to do these and I never have. But just a standard business card, you can go to your local office supply store. You know, a lot of the times even your big box discount stores will have them. Just print up a sheet of these business cards and, you know, put a few in your wallet, and that way you're not carrying around the trifolds. And I know when I go out, I, you know, especially urban caches, I tend to take as little as I can. Just, you know, it's less obvious that way.
Now, another good thing too is for people who are going to be caching, especially if they're your friend, someone who's close to you, obviously you're not going to want to do this with somebody who's you don't know, but is there are things like you mentioned the geocaching.com intro iPhone app. The other great thing is the GeoMate Junior. It's really stripped down. We've talked about it here. It's a basic starter GPS that only has the traditional caches in it, and but it's nothing, no high end unit at all by any means. But it's something that, you know, it's what is it, like $100?
Well, it's under $100. U.S., but the great thing about that is they, and unfortunately right now you can only buy it preloaded in the U.S., but it's something they just pick up off the shelf and they can go out caching. They don't have to do no prep. You know, it's just, you pick it up. What's my closest cache? I'm going to go find it. Now, unfortunately, without having the description and, you know, doesn't know what the caches are that have been archived since it was created, But yeah, it's a pretty good way to get started without a whole lot of work. And if someone just really wants to go out and do it, you know, you can easily talk them through. Well, if you go to this GC number, that one's been archived, you know?
Yeah, and Lisa from Cash Advance just said that the GeoMate Junior runs about $69.95. So really, it's a good thing that if you've got a few extra bucks for yourself, go ahead and purchase one. That way you have something that you can say, here, you know, I'm going to let you borrow this. You can go out for a few weeks. You know, if you like it, awesome. You know, you can purchase a GPS. You can purchase one of these for $69.95 or, you know, an eTrex. You know, something fairly cheap for under $100 or roughly $100, and then you can hand me that one back. You know, it's something that you don't need to worry about, you know, them losing. If they lose it, it's not that expensive. You can hand it to them. The best way to convert a muggle is actually take them caching.
Oh, definitely. And you can get the update kit for those units for another, she's saying, $25, actually. And that one will allow you to then update those caches on a regular basis and then have them, you know, fairly consistent. And it also allows you to control better what's going into it. So if you're going to buy one, or if your friend who's looking at caching is going to buy one, I definitely recommend getting it. And I believe they actually have a kit now where you can buy both the GeoMate Junior with the update kit for about the same price. But yeah, it's two, and then, you know, the two pieces all in one, and then you can just grab that and pass it to your friend or kids. And, you know, I still got that one that I haven't used very often, but, you know, it's a good thing to be able to pass just to the kids in the group, even if you don't have a newbie.
Now, as far as that you mentioned the geocaching iPhone intro app, from what I hear, there's also a couple Android apps that are freely available and places online that show you how to do that. So if a lot of times people who are, you know, you're caching, or people that are asking you what geocaching is, have something like an iPhone or an Android phone, something that they already have, that if there's a cheap or fairly free app that they can do it with, they're more likely to pick that up and do it. You know, I'm willing to spend $10 on an iPhone app to try out geocaching. You know, it's not that bad.
Well, the nice thing, though, is that the geocaching intro app is free, so you can try it. If you like it, then you spend the $10 to get the full app.
That is definitely true.
And, there's a lot of cool apps for a bunch of the other platforms. I think even the Trimble Navigator, or Trimble Geocache Navigator, has a free trial period. But again, the problem with some of those can be it's a little too complicated to get someone into it just through that. You kind of have to walk them through. So having these really simple stripped down apps is a great thing for getting them out on the trail without all of that overhead. You know, you don't want to get too deep too quick, because then they're just overwhelmed and probably aren't going to get into it.
And honestly, that's what I find myself. The problem I find myself is, A, I get really excited about caching, and then I try to tell them everything there is to know about caching. So I'm trying to tell them about all of the different kinds, and then the travel bugs, and then logging online, and then, you know, events and meet and greets and everything like that. And I lose a lot of people like that. If I had, you know, something simple like the printed PDF, I could hand it to them. I could say here and be done and over with. Because for me, I'm way too complicated when it tries to explain things.
Yeah, well, and the problem too is if they haven't had a chance to sit down and learn some of the basic rules, you know, you don't trade, or you don't trade for travelers, you move travelers, that kind of stuff. You know, you can run into some fairly angry letters to them if they actually decide to pick it up before they've really learned the hobby.
Well, and that is definitely true. And I even find that for myself, even if I take one of my friends out and, you know, cache with them, even the setup of my GPS to them is confusing, because I have GSAC sending all sorts of special things out as the waypoint name, and I have to kind of explain, okay, so A1, you know, is the difficulty in the terrain, and then, like, you know, yes, there's a travel bug in there. And for me, if I'm going to take someone out, I'm going to set my GPS up just to have the waypoint name, because I'm so used to having the way I set it up, but it really confuses people.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I try to stay a little bit closer to the defaults. It can be so hard to try to teach someone or to work with someone who is just, you know, trying to get stuff set up if you've got this real custom workflow going. And I used to do a lot of that stuff, and now I've just decided, you know, I talked to too many people who aren't going to go through all that work, so I need something a little bit closer to what they're doing.
That is true. Well, this is a basic rundown of Muggle conversion. Again, if you want to catch the Cachers of the Roundtable episode, that's episode 22, and we'll go ahead and link to that in our show notes, which can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. So, Daryl, any closing thoughts before we close the show here?
Well, this is one of those things that does always change, so it's a good thing to bring up every so often. And I'd love to hear about any Muggle conversions that anyone else has had either really good success with or some pitfalls maybe they found. So maybe they can call those into our voicemail line.
Sure. And again, that voicemail line is 206-350-3GPS. And Jeff Bolden says that his best advice is go ahead and give them involved in a local caching club, maybe take them to one of the meet and greets so they can meet other people in the area. I know that was one of my, you know, for me, the easiest way to learn a lot more about the advanced stuff is get with the cachers at a meet and greet type of thing.
Yeah, those meet and greets are great. You know, there's always cachers willing to take newbies under their wing and help them out. So, you know, any events are really a good thing for new cachers, but those geocaching 101s, the classes at the outdoor retailers, at the parks, those are events where they're not going to feel as out of place because everyone there is learning for the first time.
True, true. Well, we want to thank you guys for joining us tonight. If you found any value in the content of our podcast, please consider helping us make this show sound even better by donating at geocachingpodcast.info and clicking the donate button there on the right. We'll get you into our Plus member feed for that, where you can see other cool videos and stuff that we do on the side as extra little projects. Join us each Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and all of our links to past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. You can call our voicemail line at 206-350-3GPS. Anytime to leave us a voicemail with our feedback, ideas, questions, go ahead and call us 206-350-3GPS. Have a safe week and happy caching.